Let's pray a little bit more. Dear God, use me this morning as the instrument of thy will. Speak through me so whatever results that you desire here today will be accomplished. In all things, thy will, not mine, be done. Amen. If I had the power to quit drinking on my own, I'd have never come to AA. Why should I? That's the reason that I say that prayer. It's to keep me reminded and grounded and centered in the truth. Left to my own devices, I absolutely guarantee you I would have destroyed myself years ago. My two best drinking buddies are dead. They ain't in treatment, they ain't in a mental institution, and they ain't in the penitentiary. They're in Oakland Cemetery in Sandusky, Ohio. I stand here today by the grace of a power that I found through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, as outlined by the founders in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is the reason that I pray before I tell you who I am. I was insufficient. We work. That prayer reminds me of two things that I believe are vital and crucial to me staying here. First and foremost, the reason I'm at Flint River today is to do God's will, not Kent's. And it also serves to remind me that he is in charge here this morning. And as always, thank God, I am not. Good morning. My name is Kent Coleman. I'm an alcoholic. Now, my parents raised me right. If my mother was here, she'd jump up and say, "You ain't turn out right." But anyway, I want to demonstrate that. I want to say thank you to the committee. I want to say thank you to Bob for picking me up, not running out of gas, and getting me here to the hotel. It is an I'm telling you, ooh-wee. I love AA. I love AA more than when I got here. And I got here, man, I don't know about nobody else, but I was starving when I got here. And I didn't understand AA, and I didn't know too much about it. But I came into meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I sat in meetings. I don't know what a sponsor is. I don't know what a home group is. I don't know a big book from a Rand McNally Atlas when I come in here. But I always felt better after the meeting. I heard people in here give voice to things inside of me that I would never tell. That I would never tell. Didn't even want to look at. And I heard people not only give voice to them, but talk about solutions and talk about being happy. I always say, when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, if you alcoholic, you will immediately know you in the right place. We tell stories in here Stephen King couldn't make up. Right? Nobody thinks like we do. Right? Yes, it was my fifth DUI and I was going to court. I just thought it would be good to have a couple of drinks before I went down there. Right? No, come on. Come on. Right? You come in here, man, and it's like, boom, these my people. I don't know. And here's the crazy thing. I don't know them, but these my people. Right? I got friends in this room I ain't even met yet. This is the only place in the world I read this thing I loved that said, Alcoholics Anonymous, the only place in the world where you can meet somebody and in 10 minutes be reminiscing. Right? This is what happens in here, man, right? It's the oneness of one, the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? Thank you for having me here. To our new friends here, welcome. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. When I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, nobody sprinkled pixie dust over my head, and all of a sudden I understood that. What I will share with you is my experience. I've been here for a while. Sponsor, big book and steps, home group, service commitment. And you can stay here as long as you want to. It's that simple. It's that simple. I came in here, I hear best with my eyes. I didn't come here trusting you because I didn't know you. And I come from a world, I didn't trust me. So I come from a world where you don't trust anybody. I'm not going to come into a room of complete strangers and then all of a sudden, oh yes, yes, I believe. I don't know you. I get that. Just watch. I believe you can learn everything you need to know about Alcoholics Anonymous. You come in here and you don't even have to open your mouth. I saw what worked. I saw what didn't work. Right. I saw who was doing it. Right. I saw the whole thing. I saw the whole thing. So I came into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous just like everybody else. I had never been here before. I didn't know anybody that had ever been here before. right? I went off to treatment. I didn't even know that I was going to go to AA. I didn't even know what treatment was. I have a college education. I don't know none of this. None of this. And so I come in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And I start, I'm a street guy. How you stay alive in the street? You watch and you listen. That's how you stay alive. That's the skill set that I bought y'all. And I came in here, I started watching and listening. I saw two groups of people. I saw people who were in and out, in and out, in and out. And I'm not casting shade on people who have problems. Some of our best members did not get this immediately. I'm not doing that. I'm sharing with you my experience because that's what y'all asked me to do. I seen people coming in and out of here, and every time they came back in, those who were fortunate enough to come back, they look worse than the last time they came back in. I didn't see them come in improved. I didn't see nobody come in here passing out $100 bills with a new BMW talking about how good it was out there. They were restless, irritable, and discontented, and they talked of terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair, and you could see it in their eyes. That's group one. Then there's another group of people. You see them at your local meetings. You see them here at Flint River making coffee, setting up tables and chairs, putting out the literature, greeting people at the door. They talk about God, big book, steps, spirituality, enjoying life sober, and helping others. We'll call them group two, right? Now, I ain't no rocket scientist, but these group two people looking a heck of a lot better to me than group one, right? So being a simple guy, and I am a simple guy, I said, well, what are these people doing that these people ain't doing? Come on, right? Okay, these people over here, they got a sponsor, right? That's somebody with work and knowledge and experience with the steps in the book who is willing to walk you through that process. And just as importantly is a living demonstration of those principles in their life who can show me what my life can be like if I do what they do. My first sponsor told me recovery is in your feet, it ain't in your mouth, and it ain't in your head. If you want what we got, then you follow us. And I followed my first sponsor. I had Kenny Bombalicki, and I was sponsored by Bill Finley and Lorraine, and Kenny's sponsor was Neil in Cleveland, and Neil was sponsored by Dr. Bob. And I followed them guys. I did what they did. My sponsor today is sitting right over here. He'll be your speaker tonight. Now I follow him. It's simple. If you want what we got, then do what we do. And my first sponsor told me, he said, I'm going to train your feet to move against your head. Hey, you know what I said? I said, oh, you don't know the head you messing with, right? I will go home tomorrow. Monday, I get up and I drive to Toledo and go to work. I'm purchasing manager of a company in Toledo. And then I'll come home. It'll be about 5 o'clock when I get home. And I will say to myself, you was just at Flint River. You went to meetings all weekend. You just went to work. You deserve to stay home tonight. And as I'm doing that, I will be walking out the door on my way to Monday night UAW at 7 o'clock. Because that's how that works. We talk about taking contrary action in here. You can call it what you want to. I move my feet against my head. The problem of the alcoholic centered in his mind rather than in his body. This is the thing up here that'll kill me. Okay. So that's sponsorship. Before I get away from that, I'm going to say this real quick. If you're new in here, having a sponsor is a great thing. I got a sponsee sitting over here in the corner with headphones on his head. Listen, if you having a sponsor is a great thing, being sponsorable is a whole lot better. All right? People say to me all the time, Ken, how many people do you sponsor? My response is always the same. I always say, oh, about half of them. Right? I mean, everything in here will give in proportion to what you give. If I don't use sponsorship, I don't get sponsored. And I'll tell you something. That won't work for me. Right. Another thing, these group two people had, they had something called a home group. At a home group, it's the Venice Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Sandusky, Ohio. We started as an Oxford group meeting in 1938. We've been around for a hot minute. What I tell you about my home, don't say wild, because it's just a regular group. We're an AA group. We ain't the best group in the world. We ain't the worst group in the world. It's an AA meeting. Our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I think we do a pretty fair job of that, and we have a lot of fun in the process. My first sponsor told me it's okay to stop competing in here now. This better than or less than thing that keeps me separated from will kill me. Why do my group, tradition one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. It's a little guy in Sandusky, Mark. Mark, he always say, man, ain't it great for once in your life just to be a member of the herd? Right? I don't have to. I'm one among many. I'm here to serve and here to do. Our group is a place where an alcoholic can come and you can get some help. And we don't step away from new people in here. At our home group, when somebody new come in here, we sit down and talk. You can't raise your hand and say you new at our home group and get out of there without us at least trying to accost you a little bit. Right? And share with you about what we do up in here and ask you, do you have us? But it's crazy, man. My home group, because we've been around a long time, we got a little complacent. We wasn't getting no new members. Our attendance seemed to be pretty stagnant, right? Right? So, you know, we have the group conscious meeting. We do the group inventory. We took a look at ourselves. We didn't like what we saw. I think that the format for the Venice group was bought out of the mountains on a stone tablet at some time. They haven't been changed in like forever, right? And I looked at the format one night and I'm like, we ain't getting no new members, right? And I looked at the format and it says, if you're looking for a home group and you want to get active, please see a home group member after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. We did that for 80 years, right? Right, and nobody was coming, right? So I was sharing about 3 months ago. I was sharing, and I got to that, and I said, I'm going to digress from the format for a second. Boy, you should have seen them old guys in the back shit up like this. He's about to digress from the format. Oh my God, lightning's going to strike and kill us all. And I did about a 2-minute talk about what a home group is and what it did for me and my recovery. We got 4 new members that night, and we've continued to get them since. Sometime I got to remember what it's like to be new and not assume that people come in here understand the significance of these things. If people had not told me these things, we sit around here now and these people walk in here and we like, hey, glad to see you, whatever. We don't even know these people. If this is the last house on the block, how'd you like to be ignored here? I'm not going to get into all that right now, but I just, you know, you ain't got a home group, you're homeless in AA. It's the last place in the world I can afford to be homeless. It's what I like to call the total package in Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, home group, big book and steps, service commitment. Man, listen, in my experience, I have yet to see an alcoholic of our type. And if you don't know what alcoholic of our type is, read the book. Come in here, take that package, apply it to their life a day at a time as best they can, and go out here and take a drink. I ain't seen it happen once. Flip side of the coin, I have yet to see an alcoholic of our type come in here, ignore those things, and stay sane, sober, happy, or alive for any significant amount of time. The simplicity of Alcoholics Anonymous. Those who do get, and those who don't. And it's just that simple. My first sponsor used to say, I never sat in the bar room, watched somebody across the bar drinking a drink, and thought I was going to get drunk watching them drink. That's just as ridiculous as me coming in here, sitting in a chair, watching you get a sponsor, work the steps, get active in a group and help other people and think that somehow magically it's going to rub off on me. Those who do get and those who don't. And it's just that simple. This old timer at home, Mr. Willie, he used to walk past me and go, sitting in a chicken coop don't make you no chicken, and then walk away from me, right? Right? Because I did that for a minute. And I'll talk about that later, right? You know, those who do, man, right? 12-step does not say haven't had a spiritual awakening as a result of attendance. Attendance is good. I'm not here knocking meetings. Meetings, conferences and conventions, literature. The dissemination, workshops. My God, the dissemination of information is at an all-time high in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, but our rate of recovery is not at an all-time high. Some's missing. We talk about that. Anyway, I'm an alcoholic. I didn't know what alcoholism was when I got here. Y'all remember Otis on the Andy Griffith Show? That's what I thought an alcoholic was, right? Wrinkled clothes. Otis always had a cheap pint on him. He's in and out of jail. I watched every episode of the Andy Griffith Show. I don't remember Otis working no place, right? Right? I always tell the story. It's a true story. I was over in England about 10 years ago speaking at a thing in London. And I asked them, I said, y'all remember Otis on the Andy Griffith Show? And 2,000 people went, no. Not one of my highlights as a speaker. I thought they had cable. Come on. But y'all know what I'm talking about. The guy under the bridge, long trench coat, stocking cap on, drinking Wild Irish Rose, Mad Dog, Thunderbird out of brown paper sack. Yes, that certainly must be an alcoholic. Reason, that's my definition when I got to you. It's the only thing that had not yet happened to me. And the only reason that hadn't happened to me is that my family refused to let me live outside. I can tell you honestly, I worked at Ford Motor Company. I did not have a car. Yes, it is possible. And I would leave Ford Motor Company, and I would get a ride, and I would go down to Winos Alley in downtown Sandusky at 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm putting 50 cents on a bottle of wine with them old men in Winos Alley in downtown Sandusky. Only difference between me and them old men is when it got dark, it was somebody to let me in the house, and there was nobody left to do it for them. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had the nerve. Because, see, when I come to Alcoholics, if you knew, come with me for a minute. When you knew, your head don't like Alcoholics Anonymous. When my disease, I came here, my disease was active. Walking into an AA meeting, I did not have a spiritual awakening. And my disease wants to defend itself when I walk in here. And it wants to compare. It does not want to identify. And the first thing it does is it starts looking for differences. Ain't enough black people in here. Ain't enough college educated people in here. I'm down at the club, right? And I heard stories of homelessness and all terrible things, right? So I went over to the poor Clinton Noon meeting, and I had decided that I don't belong here. I haven't been homeless. And I told him that over to Nooners. There was a guy, his name was Jim Redman, God rest his soul. He was sitting way in the back of the room. And I think the thing that upset me about it, because I told him, I said, you know, I ain't never been homeless. The thing that upset me about this the most was Jim Redman was in the back of the room. It was not his turn to share. Jim Redman died 53 years sober. He's an old Cleveland guy that moved out there by me. And he said, really? He said, let me tell you something, buddy. He said, you grown and you living in your mom and daddy's house and you ain't paying no rent. You homeless. Don't you hate these guys in AA? Well, when the truth comes in the room, right? It's like, bam, right? And you just ease out the door after the meeting, right? Thank God for guys like that. I got a mental obsession, a thought so strong it'll overcome or override any thinking I can raise as a defense against it. If you're new in here, what are some of the mental defenses I try to raise against taking the first thing? Common sense, willpower, rebuild story. Build story, become Kent's story. Fear of consequences, I may face. Mary Bill said, fear sobered me for a bit. Yeah, for a bit. Right? I used to wake up in the morning and make a list of all the reasons I ain't drinking. Lose your job, go to prison, get kicked out the house, girlfriend gonna leave you, die. I faced all those things. And I would lay in the bed and take a look at that and say, no way, I'm done. And I meant it as much as I mean it now. Anybody here know what I'm talking about? You had these moments of truth where you look at the truth and it's like, no, I'm not doing this no more. And by God, I got a college education without going to class. I can do anything. Right? I've accomplished things in my life. I know I'm not stupid. I know I got a strong will. So enough of this is enough. I don't want to see my mother cry no more. And then I get out of the bed. And a couple seconds later, something happens. Follow me if you knew. Out of nowhere comes this thought. It's Friday. It's Friday, and you know you have worked all week, which for me is 3 days. You know, Kent, none of this is really your fault. This is the United States of America. I'm grown. I ain't hurting nobody, and by God, I deserve a, anybody following this. Now, I want you, if you knew, I want you to come with me because we're going to go to our book for a minute. When that thought comes, our book says that parallel to this sound reasoning, and the sound reasoning was like, here's all the reasons why I shouldn't do it, so I ain't doing it. That's sound reasoning. But parallel to that sound reasoning ran some insanely, circle the word insanely in your book, trivial excuse to take a drink. You remember in more about alcohol, there, when that thought comes, I want you to stay with me for a second. There's no debate. I don't say, well, wait a minute. Just 5 minutes ago, you... That's gone. Remember when the book said there had been no fight whatsoever? Right? I can look back at my own experience. Dude, I died in 1984. Died. Two hours out of the cardiac unit. I spent 2 days in the cardiac unit. I'm in a regular room. I'm in the cardiac unit. Tears. God, let me live. My whole family, half the town up there. Dude, that's what guys like me do. And God, I'll never drink again. 2 hours out of the cardiac unit. Here's the thought that came to me. Whoo, that was close. But they said, you're fine. This calls for a celebration. I knew I was in the right place. The normal people do not think like that. Obsession of the mind, allergy of the body. I take a drink of alcohol and it does something to me. It don't do to other people. My next door neighbor, I was cutting my grass one day in 90 degrees. Riding on my lawnmower, so was my next door neighbor. I was sober 10 or 12 years. He got hot and thirsty, shut his lawnmower off. He went over to his deck. He flipping open the cooler full of cold beer. He drank a cold one, quenched his thirst. Nobody here is going to believe it. I see this in my own two eyes. With that full cooler of beer still sitting there, that man actually got back on his lawnmower and finished cutting his grass. I'm over there. I'm like 10 or 12 years sober going, like, what's the matter? You got beer. What's the matter with you? I'm being on these airplanes drives me crazy. I got a bottle of Jack Daniels. It was this big. Got a whole can of Coke. And didn't even pour the whole Jack in it. I'm across the aisle. I'm like, what are you doing? Pour that liquor in it. Get a bottle of them, a case of them things for me. Difference between me and my neighbor. I get off my lawnmower. I pop the top on a cold one. I suck her down. It don't quench my thirst. What it does to me, if you knew, stay with me. Maybe to you, is it makes me thirstier. And grass cutting is over at the Coleman house. My lawnmower be in that same spot 2 weeks from now when I get out of the county. The Kessler's next door. There he goes again, Mabel, right? Up the street I go. Spiritual malady, soul sickness. This is the big one. Right? My disease is rooted in selfishness, self-centeredness, and an unbelievable amount of self-concern. I know when I look back at my life now, before I came to you and sometimes with you, I have been so consumed with me that literally I can't see you. I can visually see you. But I can't see you. People became for me, maybe some of y'all will understand this. Human beings became to me just a means to an end. I got this unsatisfiable, unquenchable thirst in me for something. And I didn't know what it was. But I tried everything I could think of because I wanted to get comfortable. I wanted to feel okay. I wanted to feel like other people looked. I wanted to be just happy, but I'm not. I'm always comparing myself to other people. I always come up short. No matter what other people tell me about myself, I don't really believe it because you don't really know me. And I became just obsessed with the idea. I'm a guy who wants to know, maybe some, the word I'm thinking of is security. I'm a guy who wants to know how the story ends at the beginning of the book. Anybody like me? See, if I know that everything gonna be all right in the end, then I don't have to worry about what, but if life was like that, we wouldn't need God, would we? And we wouldn't need faith. Right? So I'm a guy that wants to know all that, but life don't work that way. And I had no faith because I had no works. I had plenty of information about this power, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but I had no works. I'm looking at you. I'm looking at intellect. I'm looking at material things. I'm looking for something. Right? I always say that an unfulfilled spirit is like a divining rod. It will keep searching, right? And if I don't have it pointed in the direction it should be pointed, then I'm going to start to bring things into my life to seek self-fulfillment that will never work. None of it ever works, does it? Right? If it continued to work, we wouldn't be here this morning, would we? It stops working no matter what it is, right? Our book says that when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Let's go to step 12. Haven't had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. So what is the objective? The first 11 steps to do what? Awaken my spirit. I was talking to my sponsor before the meeting. I was sitting next to a girl with two little babies on the flight from Cleveland to Atlanta. And I was saying, like, if you bring a baby into a room, like if you took one in a nursing home, that old Ebenezer Scrooge guy in the corner will light up, won't he? You just, why is that? Because when you bring a baby in the room, you bring unfiltered spirit of God in the room. It hasn't been contaminated yet by prejudices, biases, and the negative opinions and teachings of other people. It's pure God, right? And I'm on the phone, I'm like, somebody texted me and told me I should take a nap on the plane because I work yesterday. And I was like, I got two babies up here with me. And she was like, oh, boy, right? Because I'm going to play all the way to Atlanta because I got God sitting next to me. That's what happens in here. That's what's the faith. It's crazy. We love being around 50-year people. Like, you start out as a baby with this completely free spirit, untampered with. Then you start to put all this stuff between you, God, other people, right? And our book talks about that, right? We obscure our spirit with all this stuff, which is the reason we have 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, right? 10, 11, right? So my spirit become obscured. What happens? Why I used to wonder why I like to be around the old timers in here. It's because of their persistent and consistent actions in unobscuring it. Their spirit has got to be free like a child again. Right. We start here, we go here, and then we start applying these steps to our lives. And all of a sudden, people start getting free up in here. Right. And you sitting with a guy who's been doing this for 40 or 50 years, it's just like sitting in a room with a baby. Did that make sense to you? Yeah. Right. Because that's what happens in here. I was born in the city of Sandusky, Ohio, with the second of three boys. I was raised in a Christian home. I had as fine a mother and father that have ever graced this earth. I am the son of Pete and Evelyn Coleman. My mom and dad are gone now. And I will tell you this, that we were some very, very lucky young men. I had an older brother and a younger brother. We got everything that we wanted. Most people say everything we need. We got what we wanted. If mom and daddy said no, there was another person in our house who never said no. That was called our grandmother. And she came up here, she came to Ohio from South Carolina. And she moved in the house with us and my grandfather and my father's father. So I had three grandparents. We had this big old house, man. Man, 10 speeds, mini bikes, $100 tennis shoes in the early 1970s. When I went off to college, I peeled a sticker out of a window of a brand new car. That's the kind of mom and daddy I had. Wasn't sent to church. We were taken to church. My mom was the head of Ohio Baptist Women's Convention. It's people from here, Albany. Been in my house. people in religion and civil rights. People have been in my house. My mother was a power. And I made her my worst enemy. My father was the commissioner of the youth football and baseball league in our town. Not a week goes by in the city of Sandusky when somebody doesn't say something to me about my mom or my dad. They had an impact on a lot of people's lives outside our house. My mother worked for Chrysler Corporation. My father worked for General Motors. I'm retired from Ford. And we had a lot of problems in the house. We had really nice cars. Anyway, growing up was great, right? As a kid, I was a shy kid. I hid behind my older brother. My older brother was my ease and comfort growing up. My older brother, I love coming to Georgia, and I always say, you know, y'all have me down here a lot. I keep asking me because I love y'all. I could live in Georgia because y'all got good AA, right? Good weather, and y'all got something down here called football, right? And I'm from Ohio, baby. Right, so I know a little bit of something about that. And we grew up. My father played at West Virginia State. My uncle Bo played at Penn State. I had two cousins that played in the National Football League for over 10 years. My family do football. We do it on Saturdays and Sundays in front of a lot of people. And we grew up. I grew up idolizing my brother and hiding behind my brother. My brother was going, accepted a scholarship to Ohio State University. He was a running back. And, it seemed like, I'm terrified of life, but I got him, right? And my brother was a running back. He was 6'2". He weighed almost 220 pounds when he was a sophomore in high school. He could run a 4.4 40 on a cinder track and tennis shoes. And that brought Woody Hayes to our living room. And my brother was a guy that walked into it. My brother, so I'm going to tell you something. My brother was the nicest guy in the world, but if you went sideways at him, he'll handle his business. And, you know, and I wasn't like that. I'm scared of everything. Right? I'm scared of girls. He wasn't. Right? He couldn't. We in the South. My brother was one of them people that touches stuff and it went to gold. He wanted to play the guitar. They bought him a Gibson guitar, an expensive guitar. And we started, and I wanted to play the piano, so they bought me a Baldwin piano. And we started going to Lombardi's music. My brother used to go in the back. The Lombardi family had a local band that played in bars around town. And they had a little studio in the back. He'd go back there. He didn't go into the take lessons room. And he would jam with them for an hour while I'm in there with Pam Lombardi going like this, right? And my mother came to pick us up, and he came out of the studio. And my mother said to him, if you're as good as they are, why am I paying money for you to come here? So we went home, and she said, I want you to play something for me. And she took a 45, and it was by B.B. King. It was called The Thrill Is Gone. And she put The Thrill Is Gone on. My brother leaned over, and he plugged into his amp. And he started listening to The Thrill Is Gone, and about halfway through it, he closes his eyes. He starts dee, 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 and then boom. And she took the needle off, and he played The Thrill Is Gone, and you would not have known that B.B. King was not there. And when he got done, he got sweat rolling off his face. He got this big smile on his face. Because, see, my brother was free. He didn't care what you thought of him. He didn't care that, you know, he's expressing emotion. He didn't care. My brother was free. He lived his life. My mother took the needle off that record and looked at him and said, oh, my God. I'm sitting there and I'm looking at that Baldwin piano and I'm thinking to myself, by God, one of these days I'm going to play that thing. Does anybody understand what I just said? One of these days, we talking here about the bondage of self. I'm already shutting myself off. Is anybody following me? Fear is already restricting my life. I'm already using him to get ease and comfort. I'm not free. I'm not free. September 1972, my brother suffers a head injury in a football scrimmage in Massillon, Ohio. He collapses, 9 hours of brain surgery on Monday. He died Wednesday, September the 5th, 1972. Remember like it was yesterday. Is that what made me alcoholic? Absolutely not. stop any car on the street, talk to anybody in here. Tragedies happen, people live, people die, right? What did it do to me as I look back at my life? All I could say is that it just seemed to intensify the feelings of difference that I already was experiencing. Because now I'm still scared of girls. I'm scared of you. The buffer is gone. Right? And now everywhere I go, there's an elephant in the room. See, it's 1972. It wasn't 2018. They didn't send counselors to Sandusky High School. We were on our own. And his friends were messed up. That team was messed up. That was a state championship team, and they tanked. It was a rough time. Coaches left. It was a rough time. This almost killed my mom and daddy. And I was not going to take my mess to them. And I won't tell you what it did to my grandparents. So I'm out here, and listen, this ain't for no sympathy. I'm just telling you what happened. So I'm out here now, and everywhere I go, there's an awkward silence for a guy who already feels awkward. After my brother died, my mom used to talk to me a lot, and she used to say, you know, Kenny, God's been really, really good to you, and you know, a lot of things happen in life, but you're going to have a really good life, and you're going to help other people. And I used to look at my mother like she just got off a spaceship. And I used to tell her, I just want you to know something, Mom. I don't know where you get this stuff, but I'm not interested. I ain't worrying about being a service to God, you, or nobody else. If you want to know what I want out of life, I can tell you in 30 seconds. I want mine. I want to get it my way. And I'm going to need you to leave me alone while I'm doing it, because I ain't going to do it the way you do. My mother would get that look on her face. You know that look mothers get on their face when they realize one of their kids is crazy? My mother would get that look on her face, and she would look at me, and she'd say, you don't get it. We didn't raise you that way. And I used to look at my mother and say, you don't get it. Just watch me. And I meant it. One of the gifts that God did give me is I did well in school. I give God credit for that today because I didn't work for it. I didn't have to earn it. School come easy for me. When I was in the 10th grade, I was taking senior classes. I was 14 years old. I was taking fourth year Latin, calculus, fourth year English, physics. I'm sleeping in class and I'm getting straight A's. I'm sitting in study hall one day. My first sponsor, Bill, said to me one time, I asked him a question. Oh, I remember what it was. I asked him, I said, Bill, you know about the invisible line they talk about in AA? He goes, yes. I said, well, if it's invisible, how does anybody ever know they crossed it? He turned and he looked at me and he said, I'm going to tell you something. I want you to remember this. He said, son, anytime you're in a room alone, all your enemies are there. And he is referring to my thinking, right? So I'm 14 years old. I'm sitting in study hall. I have a visit from the enemy. Here's the thought that comes to me. These people in study hall break their neck trying to get B's and C's taking general math and science. I'm taking all these senior classes, sleeping in class and getting straight A's. You know, it just might be entirely possible that I know everything. I had no evidence to support that thought as being true. I accepted it as a fact. I left the room and took action on it because that's what I do. I went home. I told that to my mother and father. I thought they ought to know. I thought things would change around the house now, right? They almost did. You know, I was scared of my father. My father played football when they didn't have face masks. My father was a decorated veteran of the Korean conflict. My father was in the woods in Korea. My father wasn't on no ship no place. I saw the letters of commendation. I saw the Purple Heart. I saw that. I knew my father was a man who really shouldn't be tampered with. And when I made that statement, my father did like this, like he was giving a move quick, right? I decided not to stay and wait to see what he wanted. I broke for that screen door. And to the day my father died, I never asked him what he intended to do to me that day. He must have been thinking to himself, hey, look what we got in the house. I'm going to kill it. Anyway, I got out the screen door and closed it, and he was right behind me. And my mother had half raised up off the couch like to see what was going on, right? And my father pointed his finger at me. He said, boy, I'm going to tell you something. He said, Kenny, you're going to have a hard life. He said, no one knows everything. And I looked my father straight in his eye, and I laughed in his face. And that was a significant day in my life. Our book talks about honesty, open-mindedness, willingness are the three essentials of recovery. I believe they're the three essentials of a good life, whether you're alcoholic or not. A closed mind cannot learn. It cannot grow. And on that day, I closed the door. Everybody in my life got stupid. My mother, my father, the preacher, the teacher, later on the police, the judges, the lawyer, the probation, the PO. You can't tell me if I don't know it, it ain't worth knowing become my philosophy of life. I'm selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, self-absorbed, afraid of my own shadow, and mean as a rattlesnake. I tell people I was the perfectly tilled soil for the disease of alcoholism. All I had to do was have the physical allergy. And one day I found out. I got in the car with a guy whose life I lived in my head. I don't live in the real world with the rest of you. Snazzy car, pocket full of money, ran around with the kind of girls I run away from. Johnny was the captain of the basketball team at Sandusky High, my best friend's older brother. We all played basketball at Sandusky High in the mid-70s. We were very good. And I lived his life in my head. And I got in the car with Johnny. He said, "Hey, Coleman, you want to get something to drink?" Now, I have been warned about drinking. How many of you have had the warnings? Alcoholism does not run in my family. It gallops. And I have been told we do not do alcohol well. Look at your Uncle Ed. Look at Junior. Look at Bob. Both sides of my family are rife with this thing. Listen, when my family had a family reunion, we had to get two shelters out to the park. One was for the Christian folk. The other one was for the rest of us. And I was over there with the rest of us. If Johnny had told me that day, "Let's go rob the carry out," I guarantee you I would have done it. That's a little sense of self. I am desperate. We talk about a life of quiet desperation. And I can't describe to you that this thing in me seems to increase in intensity every day. Just this uncomfortableness, just this feeling that something is wrong, something's missing, and damn it, I'm going to find it. We bought 10 quarts of Swiss malt liquor bull. To the youngsters in here, the quart preceded the 40 ounce. It was 32 ounces of beer. We dropped the convertible top on that beautiful Pontiac, cranked up the Parliament Funkadelic, and we rode through the streets of Sandusky, and we drank that beer. Awakening. Here's what I'm going to tell you. I went from shy, insecure, and afraid to bold, confident, suave, debonair, and absolutely fearless in about 20 minutes. We went behind the Derrick Apartments where the thugs hung out. I ain't said 5 words in public in the last 3 years, and I had not. People surrounded the car. The music was blasting. Convertible top was down. I looked at Johnny, I said, "Turn that music down." I said, "Cause there's a few things I've been wanting to tell a few people who are present here this afternoon that I've been wanting to tell them for quite some time." I went around that circle of hoodlums, told each and every one of them what I thought of them and what they needed to do, in my opinion, to improve themselves. The reaction of the boys around the car, they leaning in the car hugging me. They said, "See, I told you, Coleman's lucid. I told you, he's all right. He's one of us. He's loosened up. He's doing a little drinking. He's one of us." Boom. Connection. I go from separation to connection. Boom. And believe me, I made a mental note of that. When I drink, I change. And check this out. I realize this. So do you. So do you. What I see, how I see you change. Stay with that because I'm going to come back to that later. We left from there. We went over to home. Some of them girls he run around with, I run away from. Never been over there in my life. I walked into that home like I had just paid off the mortgage. I sat down at the dining room table. I made eyeball to eyeball with the finest girl to graduate from Sandusky High School in its 182-year history. I had never even breathed in her direction, much less said hello. You know, I was at the bank just last week, and I saw her, and she still, anyway, I looked at her, and she looked at me, and I said, "Come here." And she got up and started walking toward me. Now, any sane human being at this point would probably think to themselves, "Gee, Kent, if you weren't so shy and scared, look what you could have done just by speaking up." Is that what I thought? Nope. If you knew, stay with me, because here's what I thought. If you had been drinking before now, look what you could have done. Dude, look what you've been missing. Alcohol equals success.
And, buddy, you better believe I connected the dot. I can remember thinking that as clearly as I see you right now. Look what you've been missing. Now, this is an honest program. I'll be honest with you. When she got over there to me, I ain't had the faintest idea what to do with her. I don't think that far ahead when I'm drinking. But I watch a lot of TV. On TV, they go like this. So I did. And she sat down in my lap. And my life changed again. And the upshoot to this whole little story, because this is a true story. On that day, alcohol did for me what I could not or would not do for myself. What happened the rest of that day, I'll give you the rest of my drinking story, and we can get out of it. Drink trouble. Now, there are people who come to Alcoholics Anonymous who never get DUIs. You never go to jail. Listen, you can get off the elevator at any floor. Honesty is the price of admission to recovery, not the penitentiary. However, that is not my experience. If this here was a drink of alcohol, and I stood here this morning and took a drink, a cop would drop right out of that light and land in the middle of the floor. Them old guys in Cleveland used to go, drink trouble. I'm like, I get that. I went into blackout. I have no idea what went on the next 4 or 5 hours. According to eyewitnesses at the house, I came in, threw up a trail through the house, through the living room, through the kitchen, through the family room. My grandfather fell on the floor laughing. I went in the bathroom, hit everything but the toilet. The next thing I remember is my mom. You know how they do. Come out here, clean up this mess. It smells like a brewery out here. You know you've been drinking. I staggered into the hallway in what later years would be my drinking uniform, my underwear. Father Pete used to say I had a hangover you could take out and look at. I mean, I'm dying. I go in the bathroom. She's still screaming in the hallway. Close the bathroom door. Look through bloodshot eyes into the mirror. And this is what I said. Come on with me. Man, oh, man, I cannot wait to do that again. Grounded for life is the penalty that's being discussed in the living room. I grounded for life. So I had a meeting with myself in the bathroom prior to AA. I love to have a meeting with myself. I had a meeting with myself. I could solve most anything that's going on. If you knew, please get a sponsor. I had a meeting with myself. This is what I come up with. Okay, Kent, you got drunk. You got sick. You got grounded for life. All right. Now, Kent, the reason you got grounded for life is not because you got drunk. The reason you got grounded for life is because you got sick. So what you got to do is learn how to drink, come on, without getting sick. I knew y'all was my people. Sane people don't think like that. You put your hand on a hot stove, you don't put it back on there. Dude, I was gone. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a scientist or a doctor. I had this thing when I picked it up. And you know, my family is, like I told you, I was gone. I'm 15 years old. I'm sitting in school. I'm staring out the window. I'm thinking about drinking. When I start drinking, I can't stop. And what I think, I don't understand the phenomenon of craving. I drink like a man. Y'all drink like little girls. All this throwing up and sleeping. Let's drink. What do you mean you want to go to the park and play ball? We got beer. Anybody know what I'm talking about? I mean, I'm gone. I'm a parent abuser. You know what child abuse today? I got a driver's license when I was 16. They gave me a car. And I had a driver's license, a fake one, that said I was 22 years old. I was 16. I put on a three-piece suit and tie, and I went to the All Beautiful Shea nightclub in Toledo, Ohio. At least that's what they called it on the radio. That ain't what it was when I got there, but I didn't really care. I was more interested in what was in the Shea. And I was supposed to be home at 1 o'clock in the morning. I was only allowed to go to the Union Hall and the Masonic Temple in Sandusky. I am an hour away in Toledo, Ohio, at 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm supposed to be home. I was drinking a gin and juice and slow dragging with a woman older than my mother. That's a true story. I come home. I'm coming down the street. It's 4:20 a.m. And I've got a plan. I know what window I'm climbing in, right? We're going to make this thing work, right? You ever have this happen? You come around the corner and the whole house is lit up like noon. Every light in the house is on. And I go, well, I guess that sneaking in the window ain't going to work, right? So at 4:20 a.m. at the age of 16, I walk into the front door of the house. And there's my mom sitting on that couch, tears running down her face. And this is what my mother said to me. She said, Kenny, as your parents, we owe you a roof over your head, food to eat, clothes on your back, and an education. We've done that. But I got something you can't have, buddy, and that's my peace of mind. She said, Kenny, you go in the penitentiary or the cemetery, and I got news for you, son. I ain't got to go with you. She said, I'm giving you to God. I'm done. Go. Do what you want. I'm done. I'm 16 years old. And this is what I said to my mom. I broke you. I broke you. And I want you to know something, Mama. I'm a little bit disappointed. You're such a spiritual giant. Because it wasn't even that hard. And I walked away. And that's me at age 16. My alcoholism progressed. I went off to college with no parental interference, and it just exploded. I'm drunk in the morning. I started. I had shakes when I was 19 years old. And I had set up headquarters at the Boar's Head Inn. And Tom, the bartender, I guess he's kind of a sponsor. I went up to talk to Tom, the bartender. I said, I think I got Parkinson's. He looked at me and said, yeah, Parkinson's, you're 19 years old, for God's sake. He said, go get a 100 proof old granddad, drink two shots in the morning, your hands will stop shaking. I did that. And my hands stopped shaking. You know what I thought? That man's a genius. Now, my first sponsor pointed something out to me in my inventory, my first inventory. He said, do you notice that you never questioned a bartender, but you were surrounded by people who loved and cared about you, and all you ever told them was, leave me alone. I'm grown. It's my life. I ain't hurting nobody. But you never questioned a bartender. If you knew it here, I'm going to ask a question, and you ain't got to answer it now. Why is it that I'm always willing to listen to the people who harm me? Why is that? I got a college degree, and whether or not I got an education is questionable. I've been gone from that institution since 1981, and I'm still making amends there, and they allowed me to do that. And I will say no more about that period of my life. At the end of my drinking, let's wrap that up. No baths, no showers. I got a liver that's distended about 7 inches. Every time I take a drink of whiskey, I cough all this white stuff up. I'm at the point now, I'm in the later stages of alcoholism. I can drink a half a can of beer and I'll fall asleep. Anybody know what I'm talking about? I'm going into bars and at 5 o'clock and they have to call my little brother to come and get me. I used to sit, there was a bar called Ev's Corner. Ev didn't have a gun in his bar. He had a Doberman pincher that was about this big. He didn't need no gun. Ev could do like that, and I seen that what that Doberman would do. I'd be down to Ev's, me, Ev, and that dog. And I'm sitting at the bar crying. The dog is howling, whoo, whoo. Ev says to me one day, Coleman, you got to get out of here. I want to start the happy hour. I mean, that's what my life was like. I didn't know Ev had been around Alcoholics Anonymous. He used to say to me, what's the matter? And I used to say to him, I don't know. I used to sit up at night and I used to write letters to my friend, my best friend from college, who was a doctor. And I would tell him in these letters, they were like inventories. I would say, I'm lying to you. I'm not doing good. My life's a fraud, dude. I got nothing. I'm dying up here. And I'd pass out and I'd wake up and I'd read these letters and I'd be horrified that another human being might see them, and I'd rip them up in pieces and flush them down the toilet. I mean, this is what's going on. I go to church because I'm going to prison, right? So I'm going to church to try to get my mother and them to give me a lawyer. I didn't go to prison, but it just, I became indifferent to life. And I think that's as far away from God and other people as you can get. If I hate you, I still have the capacity to love you. I got to a place where I didn't love you. I didn't hate you. I didn't nothing you. Just leave me alone. How dark it is before the dawn. Came out of the pump lounge. I had what they call a moment of clarity, a moment of sanity. There's a guy in Cleveland, Six-Pack Charlie. He said, that's the moment when God paralyzes the liar in you long enough for you to see the truth.
I got in the car. My head cleared up for the first time in 20 years. My brother was driving. And this is what I saw. If you don't stop drinking, you're going to die, and you better get some help because you can't do it by yourself, and you better do it now because you're running out of time. Out of nowhere. I went home, and I called my buddy from college. He was a doctor. And I said, Rich, this is your boy. I need some help. This is what he said to me. I owed him about 10 grand. Hadn't paid him a penny. He said, man, I've been waiting on this call for 7 or 8 years. Pack a bag, stay by the phone. I got you. I got a call Monday night or Tuesday night. I got a 12-step call from the intergroup. Don't get them like we used to. You know what I told the guy on the other end of the phone? Pack a bag. Stay by the phone. I got you. And he is in detox now. Next day, my brother and his wife in the front seat. I'm in the back seat with a case of Genesee beer. I didn't know too much about treatment, but I had figured out on my own they probably wasn't serving no liquor down there. I got a case of Jennies, and I'm drinking these Jennies. I got two or three of these cold Jennies in me. I have a visit from the enemy on my way to treatment. Here's the thought that came to me. You know, I just may have overreacted here. It ain't that bad, right? I'll start my comeback tomorrow, right? What I didn't know is my father told my brother and his wife, I gave you $100, you don't bring that tramp back here. This is a true story. So I told my brother to turn the car around. My brother said, you got $200. I said, I ain't got $2. He said, then you go into treatment. He wanted that horn. We got down to Richard's house. I'm knee-walking drunk by the time we get down there. And Richard put me in his Porsche. Richard had a Porsche. Richard's house is bigger than this hotel. And I don't want to sound egotistical or nothing, but I'm going to tell you something. I'm down there, and I had peed my pants. And I'm standing out in front of that man's house, and I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I got better grades than Richard. I wrote papers for him. Kent, what happened to your life, man? What happened to your life? Richard put me in his Porsche, and he drove me to Green Hall, Green Memorial Hospital, Xenia, Ohio. Went 30-day, 28-day treatment centers. And he bought me a quart of Miller's. We pulled in the parking lot, and he put his car in park, and he looked at me, got the biggest smile I ever seen on his face. He said, go ahead, dog, finish that. And don't ask me how I know it, man. He said, that's the last drink you're ever going to take. That was 17th of May, 1992. I've not had another drop of alcohol or anything stronger than aspirin since that day. That's because AA works. You don't have to clap for that. That clapping is for God and for you. Left to my own devices, I'm a dead man. This thing was here for me. This thing was here for me where I live like it was when it started. And that's what I'm dedicated to today. To make sure that if my daughters or my grandkids or their kids need this, that they will find here what I did. And that's the three legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous. I get to that in a minute. I spent 35 days in a 28-day treatment program. That'll tell you how I do treatment. 28 days was up. They cut my insurance off. I had a good Ford insurance. They cut me off. They called up to the plant. They said, we don't think Kent's ready to leave the hospital. You know what to set up the plant? We don't either. Stayed another week. They actually wrote a check, and I paid them back later. And I came home. I played that game. It's called Don't Drink, Go to Meetings, and Don't Do Nothing Else. See, because y'all talked a lot about God in here. I believe that there was a God, but I didn't believe he would help me. I was under the impression that I had tried God. I had God, I believe, got me where he sent me. But I didn't try. I never did nothing. I showed up in church and then waited for the lightning bolt, right? Lightning bolt didn't happen, so I went to Cliff's Carryout. They had a lightning bolt in there. It's called Wild Irish Rose. And that's how I live. So I didn't think this would work for me. But I'm smart. You have to remember, I'm really smart. So I'm going to figure out how to do this on my own and enjoy some fellowship, right? Okay, 2 months not drinking, not going to meetings, 3-4 meetings a day. No steps, no sponsor. 2 months, I got a T-bar in my hand. I'm going to kill a guy at work. And I would have done it
if a guy hadn't seen it and came up behind me and snatched it out of my hand. That's what I look like 2 months, no drinking, no steps, no sponsors, just going to meetings. That's what I look like. At 3 months, I'm sitting in the parking lot of Daly's Pub. I've gone to over 250 AA meetings in 3 months, and I'm vibrating. I want to drink so bad. And I'm thinking to myself, what am I, some kind of freak? I go to these damn meetings 3 times a day, and I'm going to drink. I said, my first prayer in AA. God, what am I doing wrong? Bam! I got a lightning bolt. What are you doing right? If you go to that many meetings, you hear it every day, don't you? Get a sponsor, read the book, work ourselves, get a home group, help other people. Y'all hear that song? Right? I can't sing or else I would have sang it. And, man, thank God I went to all the meetings because I knew where to go and I knew what to do. And instead of going into Daly's Pub, I turned the key in that car and I went to Lorain, Ohio, and I went looking for my sponsor. And I got help. And, Bill and Kenny told me that we'd take you through the steps the way that we was taking through them. Bill looked at me and he said, I want you to plant yourself knee deep in this thing called alcohol. He said, no, he said, make it shoulder deep. That way you can't teeter and fall. I've been shoulder deep in Alcoholics Anonymous from that day to this. I will say to you now, I have never been inconsistent here. I have never not had a home group. I have never not had a sponsor. I have never not sponsored people. I have never not gone to meeting. If I have done anything right in my life as I've stayed with you, no matter what has happened. I buried my mom and daddy in here. I got divorced at 20 years sober. And I've stayed with you. And I got to tell you something. There's no waste in God's economy. Everything that I've ever been through, everything that's ever happened, I've learned from, I've grown from. If I've been willing and I've been willing to take the action that I've been given, I always emerge a better person on the other side of it. My grandfather used to say, if they ain't going to be talking about it at your funeral, it ain't important. So everybody in here right now that's obsessing over that electric bill that's due Wednesday, it's going to be all right. You know, God's grace has always been sufficient to meet the need. And not when I always thought he should meet it. But God meets it when it's time. It's a funny thing. Because I don't see life like I used to. Something happened to me. And a lot of it in the last 7 years since I've been with Bob, since I got divorced. I moved to Vegas for a while. And then I came back home because my two daughters were too young for me to be that far away. But I came back home. And I'm telling you, I got a lot of stuff going on in my life right now that would be, you would consider to be like unresolved. Because I like to know the end of the story, right? I don't have no idea, but I got a faith and trust in God today. I ain't worried about it. Man, I walk on the sunny side of the street today. I ain't going to tell you that every day is a holiday and every meal is a banquet. There are problems in this life, but I got a power in my life that's bigger than anything that has come in front of me. And that's not theory. Those are facts based out of my experience. Trust God, clean house, help others. That's the deal here. I can sit in here until moss grows on the north side of my body, listening and running my mouth. Recovery is in my feet. My first sponsor used to say, who you helping? Who are you helping? Click. And hang up on me. I like Bob. Bob don't hang up on you. He just gets quiet. That's us, which is way worse, right? Philly would hang up. They said, never call him back if he hangs up. Who are you helping? Click. Made amends to my parents. Man, don't listen. Ooh. If you're new in here, what's available for you here, you will have your own experience. The steps are the way to get there. If you ask me how to get to Sandusky, Ohio, and I start telling you about Cedar Point, and I know a lot of y'all know about Cedar Point. Kent, don't tell me. I didn't ask you about what you got there. I ask you how to get there. I will have my own experience when I get to Sandusky. The steps, I can't tell you what's going to happen to you. But I could tell you how to get there. Right? I sponsor like crazy. I work intensively with other alcoholics. I'm active in my group. I take my sponsees through the steps, the traditions, and the concepts. I am not sending people to a gunfight with a butter knife. I'm not doing it. I do a book study on Wednesday nights
We go all the way through the book. We do 4 weeks on the traditions. We do 4 weeks on the concepts. And I always thought like the attendance will fall off. It doesn't. It doesn't. Carry that message to your sponsors and in your groups. We want the next generation to carry on. We need to have something for them to carry on. They need to know where it came from. If I see any, they give me a tape of Warren Chisholm Sr., 12th man in AA in Cleveland, friend of my first sponsor. He made this statement: anyone who comes here is willing to practice this program, as outlined by the founders in the big book, need never drink again one day at a time. I went to my sponsor. I said, he can't say that, never drink again. Bill said, yes, he can. He said, I'm going to tell you why. He said, because this is a spiritual program, and God doesn't fail. There is no failure here. If this doesn't work for me, it's because I have not fulfilled the conditions that have been laid down. God will not do for me what I can do for myself, but he will do for me what I can't do for myself. My sponsor says it. Without him, I can't. Without me, he won't. It's just that simple. If I said anything to help you, thank God. Do not thank me. If I didn't say nothing to help you, guess what? There's some more meetings this afternoon. God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. God could and would if he were sought. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Bye.